Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Jocelyn Sambier at the United Nations in New York. Coming up in this week's program, mobile operators worldwide are working to connect billions to a better future, and experts are discussing ways to make economic policies more inclusive to women. But first, Libyan women are suffering from a rise in gender-based violence and a lack of trained midwives, making childbirth more hazardous. That's according to George Makram Georgi from the UN Populations Fund, UNFPA. UNFPA has been working to provide advanced training to personnel to protect women in Libya and help them tackle the challenges they face. Mr. Georgi spoke to Priyanka Shankar.
Libya in the past are relying on bringing thousands of midwives. They were not really training Libyan midwives. They were relying on Philippines and other nationality midwives. After the event on 2011 and even worse, after the 2014 event, almost 90% of these midwives left the country, which meant that many health centers are unable to provide woman-friendly services to pregnant women, either as prenatal or postnatal, and most seriously at delivery, at labor. So many health centers were closed. Many maternities are functioning with nurses that they don't have necessary skills to conduct even normal delivery.
A lot of training schemes have been launched by the UN and UNFPA in the region to train people to protect these women. Could you tell me a bit about these training schemes? What are they going to concentrate on in particular?
We are organizing three training consecutive, one after the other. One is about advanced training of trainers in area of midwifery skills to be able to improve quality of care, quality of delivery. Also, this will allow us to train other nurses that they will be dispatched to remote areas. The second TOT we are organizing is also with Minister of Health in providing psychosocial and psychomedical support to survival of gender-based violence. The last one, it's another TOT for training of social workers.
Many of these trainers are women themselves. How safe is it for them to be in Libya protecting other women?
I would say that the trainers are based in the big cities. They are practicing. The challenge will be for the other nurses who will be coming from corners or assigned to remote areas. Working at municipal level, we will try that the municipality will guarantee security for these newly trained nurses.
Although women's economic participation benefits society, they continue to face barriers in the labor market, such as gender wage gaps and legal restrictions. That's according to the International Monetary Fund, IMF, which recently hosted a panel discussion exploring ways to advance women's economic empowerment and equality. Nyerazai Gumbotswanda is chair of the international board at the NGO ActionAid, which works to overcome poverty and injustice by investing in local problem solvers in more than 40 countries. Bruce Edwards asked her if economic growth should be measured differently, for example, in a way that captures women's numerous unpaid contributions, such as care work.
I think we need to, because the measurement of just the economic financial indicator of surplus, it's not sufficient. Because for women in communities, when they are saying, has our economic situation improved, they are also looking at whether they have quality access to basic services like running water, education for their children, sustainable fuel and energy sources so that they don't have to walk the long distances to fetch firewood. So it might not be measured that they have an extra penny in their pocket, but the overall health and well-being of that household and the dynamics and potential and capabilities of that household has shifted.
The macroeconomic policies that the IMF have been talking about for quite some time now are, you know, infrastructure investment and domestic revenue mobilization. And that translates, I think, to a certain degree, of what you're talking about.
Just to stick with investment in infrastructure, if we put a prioritization of women's care work into the infrastructure, it might mean that the IMF technical advice to a government might be to say, okay, you want to build a road from the city center to go to this province in order to facilitate trade or movement of goods and services, but why can't you also maybe prioritize rural electrification or solar panels in rural areas so that women are able to have an energy source which unleashes their potential to be more in the productive sector. So those linkages are very critical.
How important is technology to financial inclusion for women?
I think technology is no longer an option. It's now a public good. There are exciting innovations around financial inclusion, mobile money, mobile banking, and really creating a revolution around how women are owning and are participating within the financial sector. But it's baby steps. As long as the whole financial inclusion and women's participation is still from the premise of women as consumers of policy, products, and innovation, we need to see women as co-creators of technology, co-creators of content, co-creators of the products, to be in the decision-making table, to be shareholders.
Mobile operators worldwide are looking to bring more than 4 billion people into the internet era. Through an industry association known as GSMA, they're working with governments and other partners to reduce barriers to access, such as network coverage and cost. Leaders in the field of information and communications technology, ICT, are in Bangkok this week for an annual gathering called ITU Telecom World. It has been organized by the ITU, the UN agency that deals with ICT-related issues. Maximilian Jacobson Gonzalez asked GSMA Foundation President Lawrence Yanovich about their plans to connect the world to a better future.
When we think about a better future in the world of mobile, it's how do we make sure everyone is included as technologies evolve? And so if we look at the data today, it's very exciting that we have 4.7 billion people who are connected through mobile, but we still have 2 billion who don't have access to basic 2G services. We find the large proportion of those who are unconnected are living in developing countries, very often faced with obstacles around digital skills, basic literacy. Women are particularly hard hit.
And in terms of collaboration within the industry, how important is that for you? And can you perhaps share us some examples of that?
Yes, there's one example that I particularly am passionate about is how to close the global gender gap. We've seen repeatedly that women are behind men in terms of access to technologies. We've conducted a study and found that 200 million fewer women than men have access to mobile phones globally. And the barriers around that are sometimes women are afraid to own phones, they're not familiar with the technology, sometimes they're worried about harassment through the technology. Also, digital skills are still a barrier. So we've brought together 30 mobile operators to come together and really look at solving those problems, but also looking at the huge commercial opportunity. So there's over $1.2 billion potential market in serving this client group. And so the mobile operators have developed programs that create a specific consumer research around women's wants and needs and how to address that. And we have increased female subscribers by 15 million through this program.
What's the role of business specifically in the ICT sector in meeting the SDGs?
The GSMA and the entire mobile industry on our board made a commitment to all 17 of the SDGs. And so the first most important way we contribute is through Global Goal 9, which is about inclusive infrastructure. And then secondly, we have made a commitment to studying annually where can we prioritize our actions. And so the action areas that we see are really relevant are Global Goal 1, reduction of poverty because of the transaction costs can be reduced through mobile. You can bring mobile identity, mobile money, and these sorts of solutions. Global Goal 4, education, bringing education and content through the digital platform. Global Goal 5, women, as I mentioned earlier. And Global Goal 13, which is all around resiliency and climate change.
You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jocelyn Sambira.